Mini episode 1055 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode 1055. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with a great crew here talking baseball, as we have done a couple of different times thus far through the history of the show. FDH Lounge dignitaries Steve Callis and Ken Detweiler back in. We did the World Series, the playoff preview, I should say, and now we're doing the World Series preview. So we'll be looking at what's happened thus far versus what we thought was going to happen and what is coming up in the Fall Classic this year. So Steve Callis, good friend, welcome back to the show, my man.
Great to be with you guys, as always. Looking forward to this.
Really appreciate having you, as well as my old friend Ken Detweiler. Of course, I was your former sidekick back in the day. Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler when you and I first started talking baseball back around 04, I believe, on the air, Ken. So 14 years and going strong. Another great time to have you today, my friend.
Good to be back with you and Steve. However, could we change the thing from my old friend? I believe I'm in that category, gentlemen.
Longtime personal friend, I will rephrase. Yes, an interesting choice of language. And before we get going on this again, we made our predictions going into the playoffs. I'm going to start with you, Ken, because none of us really covered ourselves in glory. I said Astros v. Cubs. I was a little bit closer on the American League end of the equation. I say this not to rag on you for the pick of the Indians, but I'm going to give you a chance to address. I have vented to you offline about this entire, in my estimation, fake news controversy about the Astros, fanned by the Indians here, as Cleveland continues, unfortunately, to lead the nation in sour grapes, whether it be whining about Browns officiating or now things about trying to put an asterisk on the American League Division Series with Houston. So I will give you equal time, Ken, because I get the sense that you disagree with me and you have a hankering for a big bowl of sour grapes, so I'm going to let you go ahead, buddy.
Well, okay, thank you, I think. if anybody's out there who is listening and is married, please do not repeat what I had, my predictions, like I did to the lovely Mrs. Detweiler, because, as you said, Rick, you weren't the only one, or did not know you were the only one that was, quote, ragging on me. I got that constantly, watching the Brewers lose and the Tribe take it in the shorts, so to speak. It just was awful. And boy, I thought those two teams were peaking and playing it right. And now I'm reading things about Francona being over the hill and this and that. And let's clean up the mess and just kind of empty the drawers and start anew with this team. And it's just, man, people just are all over the board. And but my picks may have been the worst ever in history. So
no.
I have to own that. And I'm not even going to say maybe next year, because I've had enough of Cleveland teams. Wink, wink, nudge.
No, yours aren't the worst ever. I picked the Cubs, and they didn't make it out of the wild card game. So there you go. I mean, that was I can understand this. The thing about Francona, again, you know, typical sports fan gaga, an Indians team that was nowhere near as talented as Houston, an outfield composed mostly of what's that saying about if ifs and buts were candy and nuts? That's been the Indians' outfield for most of the last 15 years. So if people think Francona is the one dragging them down, as opposed to the talent differential with the Astros, I don't know what the hell they're watching. So, yeah, Francona, we can quibble about things here and there. I don't know that he always covered himself with glory in these games, as was the case possibly last year against the Yankees. But to say that he's the answer to what ails them, don't get that at all. Steve Callis, I know that, again, as I say, none of us were particularly covering ourselves in glory with our predictions. If I remember correctly, I think you may have been a little bit closer to the mark than me, at least, although I think you had Houston coming out the AL as well.
Right, I went Astros, Dodgers, and sure we're not here to cry. We're not here to cry over spilled milk. But Altuve hit a home run in the first inning. By every measure, it was in the stands.
Yes,
I understood what the rule is. I don't know that Joe West. You know, when you have a bad baseball player, you're coaching little league or something. You stick that kid wherever you stick him, and there's that old saying in baseball, Ken: the ball will find you. Well, transfer that to umpires. And the ball will find Joe West. He's standing there in the right field foul line. He's waddling out there to make the call. And it looked pretty clear to me. Now, I'm not saying Mookie Betts wouldn't have caught the ball had the fan not squeezed his glove or whatever happened. But the rule is, and it's black and white, it's not gray, it's not interpretation. If the glove goes over the wall, you extend the wall up. If the glove goes over, you can cut the guy's arm off with a machete if you want. Apparently. Now, I don't agree with that rule, but that's the rule. So once your glove goes into the stands, you can smack that glove away. And I thought he was clearly in the stands. And
yes.
I'm not going to say Houston would have won the game, but, you know, it would have been 2-2 in the bottom of the first. They did eventually take the lead, but they lost by 2 runs, so you have to be a genius mathematician to figure out that was a key play in the game. The next game, I'll go to Verlander, who you would think is just going to win that game. Not that the Astros were going to win the series. He throws that 0-2 perfect slider on the outside corner to J.D. Martinez in the first inning, and then throws the worst hanging curveball that he's ever thrown in his life. Martinez hits it over the fence after a horrific 0-2 call. And we all know, being in baseball forever, 0-2 pitches that are close are often called balls, even though they're strikes. 3-0 pitches that are often balls are often called strikes. I think it's like a mental thing with some umpires. But I will say this. I'm an old-timer, but I'm all for electrifying the strike zone because that was a perfect pitch. And the problem in baseball, to me, is if you make 50 perfect pitches, I'm going to say 20 or 25 of them, by definition of umpiring, will be called balls, especially on 0-2 counts. So those are two pet peeves. I'm not going to say Houston was better than Boston. Boston's pitching has been better than I thought. I think it's a blessing in disguise, as we did talk about when I talked about the wild card for the Red Sox was Chris Sale, because he only threw 148 innings this year, and usually he's terrible in September, didn't have much playoff experience. But with only 148 innings this year, yeah, I know he's sick or something, but he's going to start game one. So I think he gives Boston a big-time chance because he was actually hurt a couple of times, and that's a weird thing to say, but I do think that's helped Boston. In the interim, you know, Price 0-8, 0-9, now he pitches a gem, so... is he over the hump now? I have no idea. But the three guys who were 0-14, Porcello, Sale, and Price, pitched pretty well in the playoffs. So they have a big leg up, in my opinion, in the World Series.
They do, and we're going to get into that a little bit here. What we're going to do, this has been a little bit of a tradition here. We also have this in the form of a column. It's on the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine at thefdhlounge.blogspot.com, our World Series oddities for this year, notes and oddities. I know this is always a favorite. I come up with some weird crap, gentlemen, and I got some weird crap this year. Oh, yeah. Here's some weird stuff. First of all, the only time these franchises ever met in the World Series was in 1916 when the Dodgers weren't in L.A. and weren't even called the Dodgers. They were the Brooklyn Robins. Now, call them what you want. The Dodgers are still looking for their first World Series win in a game against Boston. These franchises have had many near misses in terms of potential World Series matchups because they've often been very good at the same point in history. These are the times they've come within 1 or 2 years of World Series appearances. 1946 Red Sox, 1947 Dodgers, 1966 Dodgers, 1967 Red Sox, 1974 Dodgers, 1975 Red Sox, 1986 Dodgers, 1988 Red Sox. I'm sorry, I got that backwards. 1986 Red Sox, 1988 Dodgers. And then additionally, the Dodgers won the NL pennant in 78 while Boston lost the play-in game to the Yankees. That was a potential World Series matchup there. 88 and in 2013, both teams were in the LCS, but only one team advanced to the World Series. They've also had near misses this decade in the Stanley Cup Finals as far as these cities go. The Kings made it to the final in 2012 and 2014. Boston sandwiched them in 2011 and 2013, but they never met. Now, the signature rivalry between these cities occurred on the hardwood. The first Celtics-Lakers clash actually came in 1959. The latter franchise was still based out of Minneapolis. Now, they lost those finals, and after moving to L.A., lost a whopping six times in the finals against Boston in the 60s. And again in 1984, before breaking through with wins in 85 and 87, the teams also split the 2008 and 2010 finals. 2004, the year that Boston infamously broke their World Series drought, looms large in this series. The respective managers, Alex Cora and Dave Roberts, were playing for the teams they are now managing against. Very memorably, Dave Roberts had one of the biggest steals in Red Sox history in Game 4 of the ALCS. Sorry to remind you of that, Steve. One or more of the greatest players of this generation will win their first World Series here. Clayton Kershaw is on his second try, as is Kenley Jansen. Their teammate Manny Machado wasn't here last year, so he'll be trying to enter free agency on what would easily be his career highlight. Chris Sale, David Price, Craig Kimbrell, Mookie Betts, and J.D. Martinez are trying to break through for the Bo Sox. And in the divisional series era, the AL East is 2-1 against the NL West, winning 20 years ago with the Yankees over the Padres and 2007 with these Red Sox over the Rockies. The sole win for the NL West came with the Diamondbacks over the Yankees in 2001. I'll start with you, Steve Callis. Any reactions?
Yeah, I feel I should mention George Mikan, who I'm sure was on the 1959 Minneapolis Lakers. If we're going off the deep end, we might as well go all the way. I think the Cora Roberts thing is interesting, that they both played for the other team, and I think you have to give them credit. Roberts has been there 2 years in a row. Cora did a heck of a job, I thought, and this is coming from a guy who thinks Aaron Boone did not do a heck of a job, as he seemed to be the one guy who would always leave that pitcher in, not one, but two or three batters too long, and that cost him a few games in the regular season, and I thought cost him, and certainly the view in New York, has cost him tremendously in the postseason. He just stuck with Severino a little too long. In a year and a sport now, where, if anything, people are pulling these guys out too early. We don't want to be the manager to leave them in too late. I thought that the Yankees and Aaron Boone left their guy in too late. On a number of occasions, Severino specifically being two occasions in the playoffs, in my opinion. So I love those stats. I think they're great. I think we got off the deep end going, Lakers. Going the Minneapolis Lakers, but hey, I'm always happy to hop on board with some meaningless fact as well.
There you go. Kenny D, any thoughts on any of this?
Well, as I'm listening to Steve there talk about Aaron Boone and these guys and leaving pitchers in too long and stuff like that, I'm on the fence as to, I don't care for it. I'm right now on the fence. I think I tore that down. I'm still not a fan of bringing these guys up like Boone and some of these others with zero experience of coaching, managing, or whatever. And are we surprised that something like this is happening now? I mean, managers are always subject to question and stuff like that. But I'm not a big fan of that stuff. I don't know if that even plays into it.
I just wanted to speak to that one point, and that is the new era of baseball, and I agree with you, Ken. I'm not really on board of that at all. I'm sure you got guys who have managed in the Bush Leagues for 20 years or whatever, but it's a new thing now, and I think in the last, I'll go back to Art Howe on the A's, who somehow managed to get a contract with the Mets out of that, and that is these front office guys, the analytics guys, they want a manager who's a semi-robot. This isn't about accepting analytics. This is about accepting what we, the analytics department, the GM, tells you. All these guys have notebooks now with matchups. And so I think the world of Billy Martin, Earl Weaver, that's all gone. And I think that's what's happened to baseball, where really the manager, who once upon a time was the king of the clubhouse, the king of the lineup, whatever he says during the game, you GM, go get me the players, I do the managing. Yeah. I think that's over. I think in 5 or 10 years, the Mike Sosias of the world, he's gone now. I don't know if he'll be back. I think that's where we're going. John Gibbons walks out of Toronto. It was a little weird. Just these kind of old, Ned Yost maybe, these old-fashioned guys once they're gone, the new guys coming in, the Gabe Kaplers of the world who took some abuse in Philly, and they had the greatest collapse in the history of analytics this year. Yeah, and I love Buck Showalter. He might be the greatest manager never to get a World Series. He was always there the year before, Arizona, and Yankees, of course. So I think it's a new era. I don't agree with it either, but it's like you're looking for intelligent people who buy into analytics who are willing to kind of take a back seat. Neither of those two managers, Cora and Boone, forget experience, neither of them are really outgoing, hard-nosed, hard-living guys. This is the new manager, and oh, by the way, you can never say a bad word about any of your players anymore, ever.
No, that's true, and that's absolutely true. And Rick, getting back to all your information here, I didn't know that about the Red Sox and the Dodgers. I knew about the Brooklyn Robins. I think I was a bat boy. However, one of my thoughts, and I'd be curious to see how this comes out, but because you did all the research on that wonderful information there, I was pulling for the Brewers against the Red Sox once the Indians got knocked out, which was short-lived, and simply because the other Boston team, the Boston Braves, had moved from Boston to Milwaukee, if I have that correct.
That's right.
And it had been kind of fun, just from that perspective in my weird world, to see that play out.
Oh, Ken, I had it all teed up, buddy. I had it all teed up. I had the list of, like, the Warren Spahn, Eddie Matthews World Series between these cities, you know. So I, believe me, I had a parallel list that I had queued up ready to go if it was going to come to that. It was much shorter, but it would have referenced the 1974 NBA Finals. Oh, yes, it would have been much shorter.
Hey, that's when you and I are friends, Rick. Sometimes we get out of our lane.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that's like that.
Well, and I tell you what, though, Ken, I got to ask you a follow-up question before we get a little further into the World Series. When you're talking about guys without experience here, because I look at it like, and I differentiate Alex Cora along with Aaron Boone, because Alex Cora being the bench coach in Houston, coming out of a top organization and learning sort of at the right hand of a team that was really ascendant there for a couple of years, and I think still is. I differentiate him. He may not have had any MLB managerial experience, but to me, bench coach on a team like that, boom, you're ready to go. Do you sort of differentiate him and Aaron Boone in that regard?
I don't.
Oh, okay.
Which doesn't mean and that's what's great about these kind of discussions, is we all have our different points of view.
Sure.
I simply think that, again, the Dodgers and the Red Sox have extremely high payrolls, which Aaron Boone stands out because he has an extremely high payroll and couldn't pull it off.
Right.
I'm not saying, well, I guess in a way I am saying that the Red Sox and Dodgers managers have a little bit of an advantage because of the personnel they have on their team.
Sure.
And so, but that's kind of clumsy, but that's just how I feel.
Gotcha.
And for somebody like Boone to have that kind of payroll with that kind of talent, and when the bright lights come on, I don't think these guys are equipped in the first couple of years to know how to handle this. How would they?
I think there's a lot of truth to that, Ken, but again, I think it's a different view from the front office position where they have now. Look at Sandy Alderson with the Mets.
Agreed, yeah.
I mean, and the three guys he has under him, all of who have been analytic GM guys themselves, Podesta for a while, and Rizzo, and all those guys. I think it's just a different view. And again, the guys that we grew up knowing and loving. Here's one for you, Rick Morris. Casey Stengel hit .279 for the 1916 Brooklyn Robins. I just looked that up. I knew he was on the team. I didn't know what he batted. But even Casey Stengel, those guys are all gone. They're not coming back. And the few you have left who might take issue with a player like Buck Showalter, I don't know if he'll get another chance.
No.
Those kinds of guys are on the way out, and they're being replaced by definition, articulate, analytics-based guys who at least understand it. Now, I give A.J. Hinch a lot of credit because last year in the World Series, I thought he went with his gut a lot, putting in starters to relieve and sticking with them. I think Morton threw 43 curveballs in a row in one game and got away with it. But for the most part, you're going to get these younger, analytic-based guys, and I think the real power is no longer a fight between the manager and the GM where the manager wins on the field. I think it's between the manager and the GM virtually always wins. And if he loses, the guy's gone pretty quickly.
I was just going to add, Steve, I think the Sean Walters and some of these other guys, the older guard, as you just alluded to, I think not only will we not see him again because they're not analytics to the same fault that the new ones are. However, I think they're going to be resistant to any of the GMs simply because they know better. They know that the game can't be done by analytics alone. And hopefully this people will come to their senses and come around and get into a nice blend of analytics and gut feelings and things like that. I'll shut up with that.
Well, having said that, we're about to get into some analytics-type things here as I'm going to set the table. I'm going to compare the two teams. We did this going into the playoffs when we were looking at how the teams stacked up. I have the two teams that are left now. So measuring the 10 teams in the playoffs against one another in all of the categories that make up our fantasydrafthelp.com/the FDH Lounge ultimate quantitative baseline for 2018, our UQB numbers. In the power rankings, season-ending power rankings, Boston was first, L.A. was ninth. The metric that is one-half strength of schedule and one-half power ranking, Boston was second, and the Dodgers were seventh. So, like the Indians, kind of a glass jaw there as far as level of competition with the Dodgers. A little bit of that, we'll come back to that later. On-base percentage, out of all the 10 playoff teams, Boston was first, L.A. fourth. In OPS plus, Boston first, L.A. fourth again. FIP, this is where it starts to turn around a little bit, somewhat here. You've got Boston fifth in FIP, Dodgers second. But in ERA plus, Boston fifth, L.A. sixth. Pythagorean record projection, Boston was second, and L.A. was third. So the Pythagorean record will tell you that L.A. was better than what their win-loss total was, which is interesting. In the SRS, it's Boston 2, L.A. 3. In run differential, Boston 2, L.A. Dodgers 4. I'll start with you, Steve Callis. Thoughts on this as far as the strengths and weaknesses of the two teams? As you would expect there, in terms of the FIP advantage, that is something predominantly that's going to go to starting pitching. That's the one thing where the Dodgers do have certainly, I think, an edge in this World Series is when you're looking at the starting pitching and you're going 2 and 3 and 4. Because if you figure that Sale and Kershaw are probably about a wash, which I think a lot of us would probably figure, but you look at that. The other oddity to me is that the Dodgers are more of an American League team in terms of the depth that they have. The Dodgers will be loving getting to have a DH at Fenway Park because that's one less power bat that they're going to have on the bench. They're going to suffer like Boston when they're at home and they have to juggle guys. So your overall thoughts, Steve?
Well, you'll have to forgive me on the pitching because I'm still not a Clayton Kershaw fan in the postseason.
Okay.
And I see everybody and their mother bending over backwards to try and make this guy out to be really, really good. And yes, he's pitched well here except for one start. And he pitched well last year except for one start. That one start happened to be in the World Series Game 5, the biggest game of all the games of all the postseason, where he gave up, I think, 6 earned in 5 innings. So I'm not sold on him. Still, despite finally getting over 500, he's now 9-8. His ERA is 4.09, and I will say this. The ERA, you can't compare American League pitchers and National League pitchers in the postseason because in the old days of the World Series, obviously, there was no when there was just a World Series, there was no DH. Now, whenever you look at Kershaw, his postseason ERA, with all this incredible success that everyone's saying he had the last 2 years, is still over 4. That means closer to 5 if you put him in the American League. So I'm not sold. I think you're right in the depth of starting pitching, but as I said, and I did actually say this on Joe Stazak's Philly show, I said the winner, in my view, I like the Astros, as you know, but I said the winner of Boston-Houston is the World Series winner. I thought they were playing the World Series over there. Can the Dodgers win? Absolutely. Plus, they have the experience, even though they lost it last year, they have the experience of being in a seven-game World Series last year. I am not sold on Kershaw. Maybe he'll pitch lights out. The reason, though, I thought Boston would lose is because I was not sold on Sale and Porcello and, of course, Price, who now, you know, maybe you'll tell me now he's won a game. He can win more. But the reason he won a game, and this was pretty obvious, I watched Price pitch a lot, he went so much to off-speed stuff, breaking balls, change-ups. He had the Astros swinging from their heels. And they don't usually look like that. I understand they have some guys who are free swingers, but they look pathetic against Price. And that's never happened in the postseason, Price against anybody. So when I look at the big picture stats you were just talking about, I just think the Red Sox, and they have some hitters against lefties that I think are really going to do well in this series. And look, make no mistake, Mookie Betts was pretty bad in this series. He kind of got a pass because he's Mookie Betts, and maybe he's the MVP. I don't know how you split him and J.D. Martinez. I don't know. But Mookie Betts was in the low 200s in the playoffs. He was not good, and that was surprising to me. Again, nobody said a bad word about him. It's like Kershaw with pitching. Nobody said a bad word about him. But when you line up guys like Betts and J.D. Martinez and even Steve Pierce against lefties, the Red Sox have a really good lineup. So I think you're right about the pitching, but I'm not sold on Kershaw. And if Sale is healthy, I think he will outpitch Kershaw. But the reason I think he will is, again, he only pitched 150 innings in the regular season.
Very possibly so, yes. And I tell you what, I'm going to stick with you, Steve, because I know your time is short, and I appreciate you being here with us today. So any additional thoughts that you have on the series? Ken and I will wrap it up here, but in the meantime, any additional thoughts that you have? Give us your pick for how many games you think it's going to take, et cetera.
Yeah, final thoughts for me. I'm going Boston in six. Again, I think these pitchers kind of got over the hump. I don't believe Kershaw is over the hump. He might prove me wrong. But I'm sick of hearing, and I've said, and you'll like this, Ken, I get grief in New York for saying this, but I said, you can compare Kershaw with Sandy Koufax, comma, in the regular season. And when you say that, Koufax was even a Brooklyn Dodger, I'm sure you know that, before he really became Sandy Koufax in Los Angeles.
Before he got his name, yeah.
Right, but he's the greatest pitcher I've ever seen, and I was old enough to see him. It seemed to me he shut out the Mets every year when he came to New York. My old man, you know, he said, you'll never understand what it was like in the 40s and 50s, Dodgers, Yankees, Giants. And, you know, I've read books about that stuff, and he's totally right. But you can't tell me Kershaw in the postseason can even see Sandy Koufax. I can tell you Sandy Koufax's ERA was under one in the postseason. And, oh, by the way, that means only the World Series. So when you shut out a guy in the best three out of five of the third best or fourth best team in your league, that goes on your postseason record. But that's not so impressive to me as doing whatever it is you do in the World Series. And I'll say it again, last year, he was not good in the biggest game of the year, Game 5. And I think the Red Sox have a good enough righty lineup. We won't talk about Jackie Bradley Jr., who was the MVP. I should mention that. You know, I thought he was Brian Doyle there for a minute from the 70s. Because every big hit he got was, he only got a few hits. I shouldn't even compare him to Brian Doyle. Brian Doyle hit like .438. But every big hit they needed, he got. And that was shocking to me after watching him all year. You know, he's the good glove, no hit, who plays center field like a genius. And so I thought that was interesting. But I do like the Red Sox in six, nothing against the Dodgers. I'm kind of disappointed in Machado and the way he plays. Although I will point out his three-ball, two-strike bunt was one of the greatest things I ever saw because I'm a great bunt guy. And Joe Buck and John Smoltz, it didn't even dawn on him to talk about the fact that he bunted with two strikes. They were so caught up in, oh, you got a quick pitch, and maybe they told him to bunt. He laid down a perfect, can't even throw the first bunt with two strikes on him in the Game 7 of a playoff series. That's unbelievable, and it would be important if the next guy up, you know, hit a home run, which he did, and that was the difference, 2-1. They never got more than one run, so I just wanted to mention that. But I got the Red Sox in six over the Los Angeles Dodgers.
All right, and I'll mention before you go, Steve, as I consult my cheat sheet here, for anybody playing the FDH Lounge drinking game, Steve Callis, with the reference to Clayton Kershaw v. Sandy Koufax in the postseason, it says take three shots of 151 since he said that. So I hope you have a designated driver if you're listening to the show.
All right, fellas. Great to be with both of you guys.
All right, thanks, Steve.
Always a pleasure, Steve.
We appreciate it. Thank you, my friend. All right, and Ken, after that little bit of buffoonery there, as I pivot to you, your thoughts on this, again, as I ran through those numbers, again, the starting pitching and particularly the depth of starting pitching, 1 through 3 or 1 through 4, depending on how it's going to go, I think a lot of people, myself included, would end up giving the edge to the Dodgers. I think when you're looking at it here, it's really instructive to me that, again, the way that the Dodgers have leaned on some of their young guys throughout the course of this postseason here, and Buehler in particular, almost reminiscent to me of the way they leaned on Kershaw in the 2008 and 2009 National League playoffs, and Buehler has come up big, and you get to see what a couple of these guys can really do for them. That gives them an edge in that narrow, limited area. The bullpens, to me, kind of look like a push, but up and down the way, as good as the LA offense is, I still give it to Boston, and I still think that that might be determinative of how this goes. How do you see it shaking out?
Yeah, offensively, I like Boston a lot, Rick. I was hoping we'd have a little more time, maybe another time down the road with Steve, but as far as Mookie Betts over there in Boston, I thought he played a hell of a defensive series.
Right.
But his offense was lacking, obviously. But what interests me, what has my head scratching over here, is the fact that the Dodgers, playing against the Brewers, I have never in my entire life seen a regular game, let alone a World Series game, the way Konsol played that game with Miley, where he pitched to one batter, just to flip the whole lineup around.
Right.
You know, and watch that kind of stuff go out through the series, pretty much the whole series.
Yeah.
I mean, did they have a regular starter besides Shaheen, maybe? I don't know.
Well, and that's the thing. And Ken, I want to talk about this because I'm sure you're going to understand my point. And where I kept saying, and again, where I was overtly, and I had some friends that didn't agree with me, but I was overtly rooting for the Dodgers once I saw that Houston was going to go down because I said, I need a Boston firewall at this point. And Milwaukee, to me, they looked like a house of cards for the very reasons you're talking about. People kept making lazy, lazy, lazy comparisons to the 2015 Kansas City Royals. I got three words for you. Johnny effing Cueto. All right? Where's Milwaukee's version of the ace? I mean, Milwaukee was just a thing of like, well, we have a couple of above-average starting pitchers and a couple fireballers at the back end. And again, that big September record that they had with the 40-man rosters, I didn't look at the specific breakdowns here, but you could have a 20-man bullpen if you wanted to in the month of September, and there'd be nothing to stop you. So I'm not saying that they're necessarily Confederate money with how they did it, but it's a thing where you could tell, for the very reasons you're talking about, all they had at that point was smoke and mirrors. And these relievers were gassed. You saw it as the series went along. Them being gassed means that it would have been probably a sweep and maybe an easy one for the Red Sox in the World Series. So this whole thing about how the Brewers were so close, I don't see it, Ken.
Yeah. No, I was very, like I said earlier, I enjoy watching the attempts at changing this great game of ours.
Sure.
And watching it change, like the, you know, let's make the games quicker. Well, that's another show for another day.
Right.
I don't care. I wanted to see how this went out with the Brewers. I was very curious just watching, working with pitchers now at the high school level. I'm always looking for innovative ideas that may work or may not work. And I'm like scratching my head. You got Miley here. And then you get, after one batter, you got his replacement standing in the dugout, ready to walk onto the field. It's like, what? And so I just watched it play out. Not a big fan. And the third thing I'm going to say is, like with Steve, I don't care for Machado's antics. I like to watch the game police itself. And I would have, you know, maybe I'm too much Billy Martin in me, who was one of my very favorites. But I would have put it in his ear, Machado. You know, I said, that's enough. You know, the way you're playing the game is not right. And we would ban the game and police itself, which it has for well over 100 years. Although there are a lot of politically correct people out there now saying, well, you shouldn't hit them, and what does that prove? And, come on. Really?
Well,
I don't know.
You know what? You raise an interesting question about an incendiary thing that might happen here, because you got Machado, you got Puig on the Dodgers, playing the first two games and potentially the last two of the World Series in Boston, a city, let's be honest, I never mince words, a city notorious for its racist fans. What's the over-under on the number of bananas that are going to get thrown at these players by those racist chowed fans, Ken? That's going to be an ugly scene.
What a shame, too.
It's the racism of Boston plus the antics of these players is going to make for an incendiary combination.
I like the Dodgers. I have to disagree with Steve. I think they've got a much better pitching staff than the Red Sox. But top to bottom on the Red Sox batting order, they're the cream of the crop as far as I'm concerned. So I don't know if there's I think it's a coin flip between the two coaches, managers rather. And like I said, I think it's a wash. Like, I agree with you, Rick, as far as the bullpen goes. I think you're trading poop for manure. Neither one of them have a good smell to them. I mean, I'm sorry.
Right.
I don't know if it's just a down year for a lot of these playoff teams not having a good bullpen. So that's another story for another day. But, I think my pick, and that this means they're probably going to lose, so I'm going to have to go with the Red Sox on this, despite the better pitching from the Dodgers.
Okay. Now, what's your sense of how many games?
I'll go seven.
Okay. Oh, seven. Okay.
I think the Dodgers, like I said, it's not by, I didn't say, but by the Red Sox winning, I don't think they're going to win by much. I think we're slicing that baloney thin between these two teams, because the Dodgers, I like their resilience. They come right back, and they, whatever you throw at them, however odd it may be, they find a way to win, despite characters like Machado and Puig and these guys. I think it's going to be close, down to seven.
That's a good point, and when you talk about the Dodgers' resilience, that's the thing here, where my gut instinct was to say Red Sox in five. I rarely in any sport make a prediction for less than six games. I'm going to say Red Sox in six because of the Dodgers' resilience, as you were talking about here. It is interesting. We talk about the bullpens, and we're right in talking about that. I mean, I'd still give an edge to the Dodgers at this point overall in the bullpen. But you are talking about two of the finest closers of their generation in Kimbrell. On the one side, and then over on the other side here, although he has had the heart issues and everything like that has been popping up, Kenley Jansen has been pretty doggone good in the playoffs overall. So when it gets to the ninth inning on both sides, if teams have a lead, I think they can rest fairly easy.
Yeah, because it's been, for me anyway, it's been really, and maybe it's because of the Tribes bullpen that I thought was really going to be outstanding, that they were going to turn it around and magic was going to appear. My rose tinted glasses, as you know, I wear quite too often, Rick. I've been let down by these bullpens. You had Ryan Madsen pitched in game seven. I'm like, where the hell is he been? I mean, he's been around, I know, but.
Right.
He looked great, I thought.
Yeah, he did.
I've just been a head scratcher. I've tried to figure out these bullpens, the starting pitching and so forth, and just like my selections on our last show, Rick, I'm going right down into the toilet with this stuff.
Well, it's been tough in the playoffs. I've been 6-4 thus far through the playoffs, including the wild card games here, so it is going to be interesting to see how it plays out. It should be a fun World Series, and again, I'll be rooting for the Dodgers as my Boston firewall. Like any good Midwesterner, I need them to go down at all costs, so here's hoping the Dodgers can come through and prove us all wrong. And they have, again, a super talented team, as you pointed out, a significant payroll there as well, so they at least have a puncher's chance. I didn't think Milwaukee even had a puncher's chance. That's why I didn't want any part of them in the World Series. So we shall see how it played out, as was the case with Steve. Always a pleasure to be on with you, my man. I always look forward to these segments with you.
Rick, I feel, with this show, I feel sappy. That's a word my wife uses a lot. And I'm sad and happy. Happy because we got a chance to do it, but sad because October is drawing to a close, which means baseball will be over as we go into another winter.
That's right. That's right. But we can always do the post-mortem and off-season stuff, and I look forward to doing that. And then, of course, we'll be just a couple months away from the second annual Don Koster Memorial Show. We'll do our 2019 baseball preview show sometime in February or March. And once again, a tribute to my other longtime co-host on Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler, our friend and your former brother-in-law, the late, great Don Koster. So we have all of that to look forward to in talking baseball here together and with Steve Callis. Once again, Ken, thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for being a part of the audience for FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 1055.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.